Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Well, I walk into the room, passing out $100 bills, and it kills and it thrills like the horns on my Silverado grill. And I buy the bar a double round of Crown, and everybody's getting down in this town. Ain't never gonna be the same, 'cause I saddle up my horse and I ride into the city. I make a lot of noise, 'cause the girls, they are so pretty. Riding up and down Broadway on my old Studley Roy, and the girls say,
save a plane, ride a pilot.
Yeah,
I've been wanting to do that for such a long time, and I finally got to be able to do it, which is awesome. Anyway, it's 8 p.m. in the Central Time Zone, Chicago, Illinois, on Sunday night, and that only means one thing only, the Blackhawks are not playing. No, just kidding. It means Simple Flight Aviation Radio. Welcome to the show, folks. And normally, at this point, I would say, hey, Mark, how you doing? And he'd go, hey, guys, how are you? And I'd be like, I'm doing great, thanks. Anyway, but unfortunately, Mark isn't here tonight. He's got some awesome family stuff going on today, which is good. Always, you know, every time you hear him talk about flying to Iowa, well, now the people from Iowa came to see him, which is great. I don't know if Mark is happy or sad. I think he's pretty happy, but I know that he's a little bummed that he probably didn't get to fly to Iowa, but oh well. Anyway, if somebody wouldn't mind making that a hashtag, hashtag save a plane, ride a pilot. I mean, like, come on. That's a, I've been waiting for a long time. That was one of my favorite songs in college. And, you know, I gotta say, I'm really, really pleased to have gone to college when Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy came out. And wow. That was good. Let's just put it that way. It was good. I liked it. So do you, whether you know it or not. But anyway, even though Mark is not here, he's here in spirit, and he wanted to pass this along to you. He's got this thing every Sunday night called the Sunday Night Chuckle, if you haven't forgotten. And we can't go without a Sunday night without hearing a joke. And even though it was recorded and sent to me, I had to listen to it ahead of time, which I normally don't like doing because it takes away the little laugh, the chuckle part of it. You know, because I know what the punchline is going to be, but I have to share it with you. I laughed while I was getting ready for the show, and I listened to this thing, and I just couldn't take it. So I want to share it with you. I hope you like it.
Hi, Al. Hi, everybody out there. I'm sorry I couldn't join you tonight, but I'm having some wonderful family time, but couldn't let a Sunday go by without some kind of Sunday night chuckle. And I'm reminded of a time where a pilot was telling a story to a psychiatrist, and he said, you know, it was terrible. I was away on a trip, and I sent my wife an email saying I'd be back a day early. I rushed home from the airport, and when I got home, I found her in bed with my best friend. I don't get it. How could she do this to me? Well, the psychiatrist reasoned, maybe she didn't get the email. Have a good Sunday. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
I love it. I don't. There's something simple about that joke. It's like the snail joke. You know, the snail. The guy punched the snail, threw him in the woods. Excuse me. 3 years later, the snail came back, knocked on the door, and said, "Hey, what was that about?" I don't know. There's something simple about that joke, and I love it. And so do you. Just kidding. But anyway, I am going to do a little something. It's our little point counterpoint that we normally do. Mark and I, we kind of go back and forth on a topic, but I was sitting in the car driving home earlier today, and I started debating with myself on something, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to debate that with myself on the show, and it's going to be awesome. So I don't know if you can do that or if it's against the rules or not, but I'm just going to go for it. So here we go. Anyway, one of the things that just happened yesterday, and it's very tragic, a well-known air show performer had passed away in a tragic crash at the Dayton Air Show. And I don't know, I was kind of, I was really disappointed. I don't know, I saw some of the video of this incident and things like that, and let me tell you, I felt bad for the rest of the day. I don't know, there was just something about it that really kind of bugged me. And I was sitting there thinking, you know, Mark and I had talked about this a couple shows ago. Are the air shows dead? You know, from a PR standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, from a freshness standpoint. And I really thought to myself, hey, you know, unfortunately, this is going to be something that you know, is not a very pleasant thing to reminisce about or to, you know, go about. But I'm wondering, you know, unfortunately, all these air show performers, you know, have more years under the belt. You know, it's just one more year that they've, you know, enhanced their skill or escaped, you know, tragedy. And the more, you know, every year you hear of an air show performer that unfortunately passes away doing the thing that they love most. And my question is, are there people to replace them? And that sounds morbid right now, but, you know, probably too soon. But, you know, are there people there that, you know, our up-and-coming air show performers? And I was thinking, I don't really know. I don't think there are many people. You know, like you think about Oshkosh, you know, are there air show people that go to the air shows that are going to replace the current, you know, general public attendance? You're always going to have some few people, but in the overall scheme of things, is that really going to be the case? And I was thinking, no. You know, just like you go to Oshkosh, and no matter how many times I say it, you know, either weather was involved or, you know, high fuel prices or whatever, just the communities that go to these events that are much, much smaller. And the other thing I was thinking, what if you flipped that coin and did that from the air show perspective? You know, you have all these cool people like Bob Hoover, who's retired now, and who's the guy with the black Learjet? He crashed, unfortunately. You have some aerobatic teams and things like that, the T6 Texans, the Snowbirds, and who are the T6 Texans, they are the Aeroshell team. But as you start to see these people and, you know, you go to these air shows, it's not many people replacing their acts as they either retire or head west, as we like to say, in a friendly way. But I'm just wondering, is that the case? And, you know, I was trying to do some very basic research earlier, and I couldn't find anything on really up-and-coming air show performers of people to keep your eye on or anything like that. And I think it's partly because, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of draw to these air shows anymore. At least it doesn't feel like it. You know, to be honest, I don't know if I'm being snobby or whatnot, but I'm not, you know, if I had a choice between something, you know, an air show is on the list, I probably won't choose the air show, which is kind of weird, you know, given that I'm an aviation nut and all I do, I had 5 dreams last night about airplanes, but I don't really want to go to an air show. I don't know if it's the crowds or the heat or, you know, the overpriced water. And then you end up like buying one of those little lemonades that they shake in front of you. So good. But, I don't know what it is. I'm not really turned on by the air shows anymore. The phenomena of it is kind of past. I don't know. It's unfortunate because of what I just said. It's not really fair to the air show performers because what they're doing is really incredible. But, you know, I just don't think that the entertainment value is quite there anymore unless you really appreciate it. And, unfortunately, you know, I don't know how many other people appreciate it as well. And I'm not saying that what they do is bad or not great or anything. I don't know if truly the entertainment value is still there. So my question to you, Twitter folks and show folks and live listeners, is the entertainment value still in air shows? And you can tweet those questions and tag them at SimpleFlightNet. If you don't know who we are, look us up on Twitter at SimpleFlightNet. Follow us and make sure to tag us in your tweets. And I'm going to be monitoring that as we go. Mark will get those tweets as well. So while he's with his family, that way, if you wouldn't mind doing that, and just so you can let him know, as he starts getting tweets, that means he'll think, "Oh, Al's doing a good job," which I hope I am, anyway. But it's so make sure to tweet that in. Do air shows still maintain their current entertainment value? I just don't know about that. I would tweet myself, and I would probably say no. And that would probably be considered blasphemy, but oh well. I just hope it's better. Anyway, we will we'll get back to that a little bit later on. So we're here. This show is kind of interesting because we had a guest lined up and they backed out on us, and which is not really cool. But that's all right. We'll try to get them rebooked and all that and have them come back out. So one thing, though, I would like to do on this show is, one, go back to the grassroots of the Simple Flight radio show. This kind of reminds me of my whole experience of starting the radio show. It was back at Oshkosh 2013, and it was not it was kind of awkward. It's like maybe kind of like going through puberty, you know, that kind of awkwardness. And I was in a hotel room at the Hilton Garden Inn at the Whitman Regional Airport during Oshkosh. It was the night before, the eve before it all. And I it was kind of intense. I ended up having sitting in front of a mirror in my hotel room just by myself. And you know, talking with headphones on into a microphone, and I don't know, it was just a little strange. But anyway, I'm going to get back to that here, we'll fix that here in just a second, and continue the show. But I'm going to play a little song, and this is a song that I played right as I started, and, you would have no clue that I did, but I honestly did, because I don't have the recording of that show. I was too technologically inept at that point and had really no clue what I was doing. So, enjoy the very first song of Simple Flight Aviation Radio. Black. Yeah. All right. That brought back a lot of memories. It sure did. Anyway, that was a The Black Tiles by Wild Flag, and it was a pretty cool, really cool song. My cousin actually gave that to me, and gave me a recommendation for that song, and it was awesome. But there's been an article floating around General Aviation this week, and it is kind of interesting because I'm really impressed by the response of this article and what it's kind of prompted everybody. And what's really interesting about it is that it deals with airplanes and searches. The first time I saw this article, it was written and there was like a SWAT team bombarding the airplane and things like that. I was like, ooh, I don't want to be that person. But it was kind of an awkward thing. I could just imagine myself if I landed and I got out and somebody was like, you know, freeze, get on the ground. You know, that actually kind of happened to John and Martha King, by mistake, by the way. But, yeah, it's, you just kind of get caught off guard when something like that happens. And this article, as I started to read it, I actually just got an email from somebody on it. And, I've got a couple of emails throughout the week and saw it on Facebook and Twitter and things like that. And there's a pretty big backing behind it, but I want to read the article to you and kind of discuss it as we go and throw it to ourselves as, hey, what if we're the pilot command? What would we do? So the article is called, I Do Not Consent to Searches. It says, when did American citizens give up the Fourth Amendment rights just because they became pilots? Over the past year, there have been numerous reports of searches of private aircraft without warrants. The counts described by the pilots also suggest that insufficient cause was given by the law enforcement agencies conducting the searches. This is a disturbing trend. Now, I want to highlight that real quick. I would think that is a very disturbing trend. And, you know, some parallel that goes along with this is that, you know, in seaplane flying, the biggest shocker that caught me off guard was, you know, the freedom is nice and, every, you know, all that, of landing in any lake that you choose, which is totally cool, but a lot of law enforcement agencies don't think that you're disturbing the peace or you're breaking some rule. You can't land an airplane in your local pond and things like that. There are a few, lakes that do have specific ordinances against them where you cannot land, but a lot of the lakes you can based on federal law. And a lot of municipalities do not have any type of ordinance or law saying that, you know, seaplanes are forbidden in, you know, certain lakes within their township. But a law enforcement agents don't think that. As they see you splash down in a lake, they think, oh man, this guy's like free jumping off the Sears Tower or jumping off a bridge, which is totally illegal. And they put that landing a seaplane in the local pond under that same category. So what do? They come out, they draw their weapons, and they threaten to shoot you, get out of the airplane, and then they arrest you. And it's based on lack of knowledge, you know, knowing that what are the federal laws based on for that seaplanes and how we what laws we operate under versus, you know, what this guy thinks that we're doing is illegal, which is totally not. That's a pretty big battle to be fought in seaplane flying. So the Seaplane Pilots Association is actually tackling that. But, you know, what's interesting is you got to be educated doing this type of stuff. And what the author of this article suggested is that you need to be educated too. And based on a lot of the testimonies of the people that have been searched in private aircraft, they kind of came across as if they didn't really understand what was going on, or they just kind of just let people in their plane with no good reason just because they had a gun drawn or something like that. And I've always been one for, yeah, challenge the system, you know, not in a bad way, but in a good way, you know, just give it a little nudge, see what it does. But make sure you know what you're doing. So, continuing on with the article, it says, my wife and I enjoy watching Law and Order. It's interesting to see the direct link between the search of supporting evidence against someone who has committed a crime and how that prosecution makes use of that evidence in the court of law. I'm not sure what he's exactly saying there, but Law and Order is a good TV show. That's what I know. Anyway, what's even more interesting is that how investigating officials get people to voluntarily waive their rights against search and seizure without a warrant or probable cause. It's just entertainment television, right? Now, this is where it kind of gets interesting, is that, you know, you end up, this is where I say give push back a little bit. You know, you're entitled certain rights, especially as a pilot. You know, we have an incredible privilege, where we can operate under, and we don't want to let, you know, we want to stand up for that privilege. You know, this is all being about being a pilot in command. You know, you want to exercise your privilege in the most professional manner, and you don't want anybody to take that away from you. So you've got to protect it. I think you also have to protect your rights for flying private aircraft. So it's interesting is that what this in this article it says what's even more interesting is how investigating officials get people to voluntarily waive their rights against search and seizure without a warrant or probable cause. So I guess that's hinting at, you know, we just kind of, you know, it's kind of that startling effect if there's a SWAT team waiting for you at your airplane, and when you land and they just say, get out of the airplane, get down, and they try to, of course you're going to be nervous and caught off guard and all that, and you know, you're probably just going to be okay, just make it stop, you know, do whatever you need to do. That's kind of what we all kind of feel, and that's probably what I would have done until I've read this article. But you got to stick up for your rights. So it says in the article, here are some lines you might hear when a member of the law enforcement community wants to search your aircraft without a warrant or clearly articulated probable cause. One, I'd like to search your aircraft. Mind if I look inside? If you have nothing to hide, then this shouldn't take more than a minute. The last guy didn't make a fuss. Are we going to have trouble with you? A law-abiding citizen such as you should have nothing to fear. Okay, we won't search your airplane, but we want our dog to sniff outside and around your airplane, okay? We're conducting a ramp check. Please open up your aircraft. And here are some responses that you, the pilot in command, may wish to consider. Do you have a warrant to search my aircraft? If they have properly executed warrant, stand aside. Am I under arrest? If so, what are the charges? I want to leave. I am being detained, or am I free to go? If this is a ramp check, then who is the FAA inspector? Those are good challenging responses. You know, you got to stand up for your right on this, and it's kind of interesting. But I don't know. It's tough to stand up or, you know, probe back at somebody that's, you know, representing the law, such as a law enforcement officer, you know, FAA, I don't know who, but, you know, you have the right to do that. They may be operating in grounds that do not have your best interests in mind, even though you truly have done nothing wrong. So the article continues to say, remember, there is a big difference in Part 91 operations between ramp check conducted by an aviation safety inspector, an ASI of the FAA, and the inspection of your airman's certificate by law enforcement. The authority of the ASI comes from FAA Order 9800.1, Volume 6, Chapter 1, Section 4. The authority for an inspection of an airman's license, medical and certificates, authorizations, and photo identification by law enforcement comes from 14 CFR 613, and the ASI should present an identification card called a FAA Form 110A. Now, this is important because FAA inspectors should have a standardized badge. I believe, I know in the airline operations manual that I, for the airline that I used to work for, they had pictures of only the accepted badges that, you know, could be presented. Any other badge was somebody trying to boss you around and whatnot and put you aside. So you have to, you know, don't be afraid to ask for somebody's badge, ask for the credentials. They should be able to support that and understand why you're being searched. If it's an FAA inspector, you know, it's probably just a casual ramp check if that's the case. And, you know, to be honest with you, I've been ramp checked a couple times, and it's not that bad. You know, usually the people are really cool. They're just out there to do a job and present them what they need. You know, you should never just hand over your certificate. You know, have them look at it, and you should never surrender it, because then you may never be able to get it back. But, you know, usually they're out there. They're really cool. They want to help you get along as fast as possible. You know, they're just doing their job, and, you know, they're going to go on to the next person and do the same thing. Be really cool about it, you know, and all. But I actually came across somebody who, at the airlines, this was out in, when I was in, on a San Francisco overnight. I show up to the airplane and, with the captain and the rest of the flight crew. Two guys with suits, you know, kind of younger looking, crew cuts and stuff like that. They came up to us and said, they started challenging us. They're like, "Who are you guys?" They're like, "Oh, we're from the TSA. We had a big meeting. We need to see your airline's operating certificate. When the airplane shows up, we need your license, your medicals, all this stuff, and we need to do a security inspection." And it was kind of bogus. We're like, "Wow, these people have like a power trip, you know, wearing a suit and saying things like Department of Homeland Security and little things like that." And like, finally, the plane shows up to the gate. We all go down. The inbound passengers get off. We do a crew swap, and the TSA guys are right there. Now, the funny thing is, there's a third person. It was an FAA inspector as well. He was actually doing a quick ramp check back to Denver with us, and nothing serious. It was just a quick check. Actually, I think a lot of these FAA inspectors, they can travel around on these airlines, and they do, you know, go on vacation. They check. Oh, now this is just me hypothetically speaking, of course, but you know, from the ones I've interacted with, they've said, you know, that hey, I was out here visiting friends or doing this, and you know, I was able to do some work in between by doing a ramp check or two, and they kind of sit down and go on along their merry way. So that was what this FAA inspector was, totally being cool, sitting in the background, not getting in our way. These two knuckleheads from the TSA, they started getting it, and they really were kind of trying to throw around their weight, which was ultimately really starting to interfere with our duties of getting the flight out on time, the duty we had to the airline to complete that and do our safety checks, our abilities, you know, complete our duties based on our certificates, and the responsibility we had to the flying public to be able to, you know, get this thing turned around, adhere to a schedule, and keep safety in the forefront of our mind. So anyway, I go around and I do the walk around, and this one guy started following me, and it was really kind of strange. And when I get back to that, we're going to take a quick little break here. We're going to listen to another song, and when we get back, I'm going to finish the story of the TSA inspectors in San Francisco. So, anyway, real quick, this is a song that Mark and I danced to on video, sort of, after a show one night. Hopefully, it sounds familiar.
Dark a shame, darling, dark a shame. Thank you for all the joy and pain. Picture show, second balcony, was the place we'd meet, second seat, gold Dutch treat, you were sweet, dark as shame, darling, dark as shame, save those lies, darling, don't explain. What a mess, I confess, that's not all. Dark as shame, darling, dark as shame. Thank you for walks down lover's lane. I can see hearts carved on a tree. Let us intertwine for all time, yours and mine. Shame, darling, dark as shame.
and from the lovely Mr. Wayne Newton. I don't know, the every time I try to find that song, it says Wayne Newton, even though it's a woman singing it. And, it's just it reminds me of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. That is all. Anyway, getting back to the story about San Francisco and, the two rowdy TSA inspectors. So first of all, just a quick little recap. Captain and I and the rest of the crew show up to the gate. The plane's not there yet. Two TSA inspectors with suits, young guys, kind of show up, and they start throwing their weight around, trying to get ourselves to contradict everything, and it was just a little strange. We're just kind of, me and the captain looked at each other, and we're like, yeah, whatever, these guys are kind of tool bags. But the plane shows up, the people get off, and we go down to take over the plane, and the inbound crew gets off. Well, while we get down to the end of the jet bridge and we're just doing our little bag shuffle, all the rest of the crew is taking their bags off. We're putting our bags on and everything. And it was there's three people there waiting for us. It's the two TSA inspectors. And there's an FAA guy. FAA guy, totally cool, looking to just not cause too much commotion and go back. He certainly did his job just fine. But we went back to we got into the cockpit, the captain and I, and these TSA guys started to really throw around their weight, demanding all this stuff and things like that. They need to observe me doing the walk around and things like that. So finally, I go down and do the walk around. One inspector's following me, asking me everything I'm looking for. And the guy's like, so what are you looking for? I'm like, I'm looking for mechanical defects and anything out of the ordinary. And he's like, well, you're not looking for bombs or anything? And I'm like, you know what? That falls under the anything out of the ordinary category. Okay. So he just starts going on and on. It was all, you know, everything he asked me was challenged by the security. He was wondering why I don't have a San Francisco badge to be out on the gate, on the ramp and things like that. It was really weird. And I was getting really annoyed. This guy was really getting in the way of us doing things. And it was just kind of, it was pretty upsetting. So anyway, I get back up to the cockpit. And there's the other guy standing, the other TSA standing there talking to the captain, demanding to see his license, his medicals, and making sure everything's current and things like that. And we show him all that. The FAA inspector's in the back, you know, just kind of chatting with the flight attendants. He's got his seat pre-boarded and all that. We get down, and then I get the clearance, start programming the FMS to take us back to Denver, and, you know, one guy started demanding, he's like, I need to see the operating certificate of your airline. And me and the captain are like, what are you talking about? He's like, we don't have that on board. He's like, I need to see your operating certificate of the airline right now, or this flight cannot go. And we're like, we're not required to carry that. He's like, yes, you are. I know you are. I need to see that. This flight will not push back from the gate until I get a copy of it and I see it. And we look at the captain. It was pretty funny. He wasn't getting bothered at all by this guy. He's like, here, stand aside real quick. He's like, let's ask the government. Let's see if we have to have our operating certificate. So he kind of rolls his head back, looks back, peers outside the cockpit door down the aisle of the airline and says, hey, Mr. FAA inspector. And the guy goes, yeah, what? And he says, hey, I got a quick question for you. He's like, what's that? He's like, well, these guys are saying, do we need to have a copy of our airline operating certificate on board in order to operate this flight? And the guy says, of course not. That's for the airlines, kept at the corporate offices, FISDO. And that's where it's kept. You don't need to have that. You just need your license, medicals, and appropriate airplane certificates. So the captain rolls his head back and just kind of stares at the TSA inspector with a little smirk on his face and just continues doing his work. It was pretty hilarious. And then the TSA guys just immediately were put in their place and they just left. So that was pretty cool. That was that was one of those things where these guys were really trying to throw their weight around and search our aircraft, but, you know, we weren't putting up with it, which is good. So, anyway, getting back to that article, it's saying that, you know, there's certain people that have the authority to search aircraft. An aviation safety inspector by somebody from the FAA is allowed to come out and, you know, present the appropriate credentials. This is under Part 61.3. And an observe and check all of your airman certificates, photos, medicals, all that stuff. So, anyway, moving on to the article, it says, if the person saying they are performing a ramp check and doesn't show it, you should ask them to see the FAA Form 11 or 110A to confirm that you're going under a ramp check by an FAA inspector. And finally, the most important response to give above all others is, I do not consent to to searches. And this is pretty important. If that person doesn't, you know, present that piece of identification, you know, you don't have any, at least my understanding, you know, any FAA, you know, right or FAR right to adhere to anything else. But that doesn't mean the police have a right or things like that. You know, I guess the warrant is their thing. But the article says, I'm not a lawyer, and probably most of you are not lawyers either. But remember this, anonymous tips and the hearsay do not constitute as probable cause. Why is the distinction that important? Probable cause is a legal doctrine that allows law enforcement officials to conduct searches without a warrant. A warrantless search conducted without probable cause creates a basis for suppression of any evidence found during the search, sometimes called the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine. This is a situation in which you may be wise to have a lawyer, or you can call, this is a situation in which you may be wise to have a lawyer you can call, or avail yourself of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association's Pilot Protection Services. Those concerned about about their ethnicity and potential targeting, you should know about the United States versus Brian J. Ponce trial back in 1975. Basically, the trial was the Supreme Court determined that it was unlawful for law enforcement to stop a vehicle. In this case, the operator appeared to be of Mexican descent. This case law established a requirement for the law enforcement to have more than the basis of ethnicity to detain someone. It further required law enforcement to officially be able to clearly articulate those facts used to create the basis for reasonable suspicion. My thanks to Chase Snodgrass, Presidio County Airport's manager, retired U.S. Border Patrol agent, for sharing this reminder of fairness and equality under the law. There are plenty of bad guys that law enforcement, federal, state, or local, should be pursuing, not law-abiding pilots conducting lawful flights within domestic airspace. That's a really good point. You know, it's interesting. More and more is these presidential TFRs develop, and seems like they get more and more restrictive, and, you know, I don't think we're necessarily, general aviation is definitely not the issue. There's enough hoops that we have to go through in order to get our, you know, credentials and things like that. I don't mind a little security here and there, but, you know, this is being highly targeted, and it almost feels like, you know, a lot of your freedoms are kind of being, not necessarily taken away yet, but, you know, they're being dangled, saying that, hey, yeah, this could change, which doesn't leave a very friendly footprint with all of us. But unless you're clearing U.S. Customs after having arrived from outside the United States, there's no authority bestowed upon law enforcement that allows for a warrantless search without probable cause. But when you cross the border into the United States, the custom agent does not require probable cause to conduct a search of you or your passengers or your aircraft. Well, that makes sense. They're just doing their initial search of getting everything in line. I noticed this when we got into flying down to Chile. We ended up, you know, going to these different every stop that we flew to was a new country. So Customs was there. They had dogs and stuff that they had to, you know, they brought out searching for explosive narcotics or whatever else they're looking for. Dirty laundry, which I had plenty of. But it was kind of, it was pretty incredible to go about that, and see that. You know, they did it in such a friendly manner, and it was kind of, you know, you knew that you had to do this, and it was expected, and they got in there, did their job, and they left you alone. So I would just hate to be in the path of not hitting it correctly, but it should be all right. So another thing this guy says in this this article, this next paragraph, says, it's also important to know consenting to allow a trained dog to sniff around your aircraft is just as much as a search as if you opened the door and invited them in. The dog used their noses like humans use their eyes to peer into your aircraft. Also, I do not hesitate in saying I do not consent to searches. Hesitation has been used as a basis for implying consent. You do not want to voluntarily create a conversation with law enforcement in this situation. Do not try to be polite in conveying your message with watering down the message with gentle words and euphemisms. Stand your ground, look the agent squarely in the eye, and say, I do not consent to searches. I take that as the message as be a pilot in command. Be authoritative in that. You have as much of authority as a pilot in command as that law enforcement officer does. You're still in charge of that airplane. You know, fly the airplane until, you know, I always try to teach my students, fly the airplane until, you know, you leave the airport. You know, you're still in command. You still are in charge of the safety of that airplane. Just because you shut the engine down doesn't mean you're not done. So if you're flying passengers or anything like that, and, you know, the law enforcement officer is standing there, right there, the FAA inspector, I've got a feeling the FAA inspectors will, you know, they know what you're going through, and they're going to approach you politely. But if you have a law enforcement agent who's just throwing his weight around, you know, be a pilot in command right back to that guy, just as he's being a enforcer to you. Say, you know what? I've got passengers I need to take care of. You wait right there. I'm gonna take care of my passengers, and then I'll be right with you. You know, put them in their place because they're trying to put you in their place, and it's not a good feeling. And you know, I think that demonstrates something a lot more, that you know your rights, you know that you can't be messed with, and you've done nothing wrong. You know, if you're trying to sit there and flee, or you know, be stumble on your words, or try to be little, I don't know, I wouldn't say hesitant, but you know, that just leads them to believe that you might not know what you're doing, you're hiding something, I don't know. But be a pilot in command all the way to the end. I like it. But anyway, you do not stop, you did, going back to this article, you know, it says, if they continue and search your aircraft, then call your lawyer at the first opportunity. Continue to remind the searchers that you have object to the search, but be polite and non-aggressive about it. You do not stop being a law-abiding citizen by standing up to your rights under the United States Constitution. You do not have a nastier, you don't have to be nasty or mean in how you give your message. Be polite, firm, and don't waver. You are the same law-abiding citizen after you stand your rights as you were before. They made the decision to challenge you. And this guy's saying, you know, that's kind of what we just said. Be a pilot in command. That's how I take that. Be a pilot in command and you know, be firm with your decision. You don't have to be, you know, throw your weight around, but you know, stand your ground. You have the right to do that. It says, I'm willing to put my money where my mouth is. Free for asking, I've created 3-inch by 2-inch stickers that state the following. No warrant, the pilot and owner of this aircraft do not consent to searches. That's pretty cool. And it goes on to contain the last paragraph of this. Those interested in receiving these free stickers have only to send me an email at plainhooked@hotmail.com. with your mailing address, and I will mail you 2 stickers. The stickers are printed in black and white in English. They're intended for the exterior application in plain view of the primary entry and exit cargo doors of your aircraft, but best place them where you want. And remember, I do not consent to searches. I think that was a great article, and I kind of want to have this guy come on. I wonder if he's actually done something where he actually got searched. And that'd be, can you say Simple Flight Aviation radio guest? I certainly can. It'd be awesome. But we'll see what happens with that. I'm going to reach out to him. See if we can nail him down for a good show date and all that. How do you think you would react in a airplane search or something like that? I wonder if it would it be good or bad? You know, do you think you could be a pilot in command? I don't think you'd have any issue at all with any of the FAA people, but you know, if somebody is trying to come out to the airport and, you know, show their badge off, well, maybe that person might not be so great to deal with. But that's all right. We'll figure it out. So, I don't know. That's kind of an interesting subject. Probably wasn't the case not too long ago where nobody really got searched. But now, you know, searches are happening all over the place and not really friendly. Anyway, well, that's great. So, that's nice. Another thing I wanted to bring up tonight was some of these aircraft. I gave a little talk at the Leading Edge Flying Club this week. It was about what I call the pilot ruler. And it was basically an in-depth look at approach light systems and how these things are highly engineered, beautiful Christmas tree strings of lights to help you measure distances when you need it the most. And how do you use that to measure and have a nice working knowledge of that, the regulations for descending below an MDA or decision height on an instrument approach and being able to defend your answer if you're ever questioned, hey, how did you have the visibility to land? Well, it's kind of interesting. You know, these approach light systems are really key components to a approach lighting to an instrument approach. And, you know, you may have looked at an approach chart and seen, oh, hey, the visibility is 3/4 miles, instead of the normal 1/2 mile visibility in order to descend below your decision height, in order to land. And there's something that causes that elevated decision height or that elevated, you know, visibility requirement is probably due to something abnormal in the lighting, approach lighting system. It's not, I'm not saying that's always the case, but most often the case of where I've seen, it's you have raised visibility minimums due to non-standard approach light systems. So there's in a category one operation, you're going to have approach light systems like a Mauser. You know, that might be a approach light system that, you know, let's say you're going to a sleepy towered airport, let's say like Dubuque, Iowa. You'll see a category one lighting approach system there, a Mauser, there, and it's designed, it's actually pretty interesting, the way that it's designed, that, you know, each light space, a space in between each light is exact, and it's there to show you, that you have the appropriate visibility, you know, so when you see one light, an approach light system, and you see the threshold, and that's all you see. The question is, do you have the appropriate visibility to land? We have the runway environment, which is one of the requirements in order to land. We also are in a stabilized condition using normal flight maneuvers and in order to land. So the other thing is that we have to have the required visibility in order to land. So we need to have all three of those requirements met. So runway environment, we have to be in a continuous position to land using normal maneuvers, and we have to have the required visibility. And let's say we're shooting an ILS, and how do we know we have the right visibility? If the tower is reporting, or the AWOS or ASOS is reporting something less than is prescribed on the approach charts. Under Part 91, we can go in and shoot those approaches. It is a really nice thing to know, but that we can, airliners, Part 135, all these, you know, regulated commercial operations, they have restrictions on what's visibilities and ceilings and things like that where they can't shoot approaches, or even commence an approach. So let's go back to the scenario here. If we have if we're shooting a Category 1 ILS, we see one flashing rabbit, one of those, sequence flashing lights, and if that's all we see, we know that we could come down to 100 feet above the touchdown zone. And then let's say we saw that, and then all of a sudden the runway came into view. And the visibility is a quarter mile, and we could still see the entire approach light system, and we could see the threshold. We could legitimately see it. The flight visibility has to be prescribed by the approach, the minimums on the approach. So we go and we shoot the approach. We see that the entire low approach lighting system as well as the threshold. You know, the Category 1 at all Malzers and even up to Category 2 and 3 lighting, such as LCEF 1 or 2s, they're greater than a quarter or a half mile in length. I think Malzers are roughly about one half mile, and ALSIP 1 and 2 approach lighting systems are about 2,900 feet or so, about 900 meters. And if you were to convert that, that's about somewhere between 2,900 and 3,000 feet long. So if you were to take the elements and, there's certain distances where the sequence flashers, they stop and you're going to see crossbars and the lights are going to change. You know, all that's part of the approach light system, but that all those changes happen at specific distances. So you might see half of the approach lighting system. Do you have the required visibility? Maybe. You know, probably not. Because you can only see half of it. You know, and half of, let's just make it easy math, 3,000 is 1,500. So you don't have a half mile visibility in order to land. Now, if you're under category Cat 2 or 3 operations, you're under a different operating spec and all that. So you can do that. So, I don't know. I had a lot of fun giving this talk, just because it was really kind of eye opening. There's a great YouTube video. If you go out there and you find it, it's just approach lights. It looks like it's developed back in the 1960s. It's a really cool video. It talks about all the different types of, approach lighting and how to use them. And, you know, there's roll guidance information, built into this, approach lights. Did you know that? And, well, those crossbars are meant to be, information that, you know, shared with you on, you know, if your wings are level or not. It's pretty cool. So if you broke out in the clouds and you saw these lights going diagonally through your windshield probably means that your wings aren't level. So level the wings! And, all that. So, it's just, I don't know, I found it really cool. That was a talk that really got my, juices flowing, really understanding what happens in, with approach lighting systems, things like that. But, and it really open other people's eyes to see, you know, what actually happens with, in knowing the distances and using these as a true ruler for the pilot and coming into land. So. Anyway, it's time for another little break here. I'm sorry, but without Mark here, it's a little difficult to just ramble on for 2 straight hours. I'm going to play another great little song for you. And I understand now why radio stations have commercials, and it's not to take a break, it's to make money. No, I'm just kidding. Well, it's probably both. But I'm going to play a nice little song for you, and I hope you enjoy it.
Baby, you can drive my car, but babe, I love you.
Beep, 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 beep. Yeah! That's right. Paul McCartney live at Citi Field. You can drive my car. I saw that on the radio, and I actually downloaded that for my little flying podcast and stuff. So it was really great. But anyway, we've got some great shows coming up. Some guests here to nail down with actual specific dates, things like that. But I'll give you a little hint. We had some emails go out to Richard Collins, one of the famed writers of Flying Magazine, who recently retired. Phil Boyer, retired AOPA president, as well as Les Abend. I kind of want to talk to Les, see, get his little airline things. I do and I don't enjoy his articles, and we'll put him on the spot a little bit. That'd be fun. If you have any other recommendations for great guests for the radio show, please don't hesitate to let us know. Email them to Mark or myself. Tweet them to SimpleFlightNet on Twitter. And, you probably need our email address. You can email al@awaterloo@gmail.com, or you can email Mark at me02@aol.com. It's, I don't know why. I'm like kind of jealous of Mark's email. It's like so short. It's very nice @aol.com. It's nice. And he's like, yeah, I was one of the first AOL users. And I'm like, oh, I guess if you get at the beginning of something, you can have a cool thing, a cool email address or a cool domain name like, I don't know, books.com. You know, how quickly did that fly off the shelf? Now you have to be creative with picking the right brand name as well as, you know, finding a domain name that fits. A lot of them are taken. But, and another thing, like Gmail addresses, you know, you want to sign up for a new Gmail account when you find, you know, somebody else has, you know, I don't think I'd ever get another Gmail address like mine, awaterloo@gmail.com. You know, I bet the line is long for people trying to find an email address like that, but, a lot of people used to take their old college username, computer username, and convert that to their email address. I thought it was cool. It made sense. But now, like, being out of college, it doesn't make sense. If you're one of those people, rock on. Good for you. Anyway. But I think that's going to be it for the show tonight, folks. I know. The silence is killing you. But it's been a great time. This kind of threw me back in my grassroots of this first radio show where I just kind of rambled on and I felt uncomfortable and awkward. Well, I still feel uncomfortable and awkward, even though I've gone through puberty. It's been a lot of fun. So we're going to have Mark back in the studio next week. It's going to be a great time. We'll send a little message out when we have the guests. I don't know. It's just been kind of weird. This third quarter trying to get people signed up to be guests on the radio show has been a little strange. Everybody's like, yeah, we'll do it. And then they don't, you know, they go radio silent when trying to pick a date and things like that. So we'll get it nailed down. Anyway, keep the tweets coming. Thank you very much. It's been a great night. Rock on. And as always, very blue skies and strong tailwinds. Have a great night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.